Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And we are celebrating here, you know, a year goes by so fast. Richard, are the years getting faster or what's going on with that?
Yes, I'm manipulating time.
Are you?
Yes. It's already 2020, so, you know, you guys are
good,
just way behind.
Good, the election's over in
it's
that case.
Over. Matter of fact, we're going through a new election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Bergstrom and Billy Joe Bob are running, yes. It's what a campaign it is. They're all giving out corn cobs and marshmallow s'mores.
Lord. It is time again for the Santa Barbara Studio Artists Open Studio Tour. This year it benefits William Sampson Diabetes Center. And I have two artists with me that are on the tour. They're opening their studios for the tour. And we're going to talk about how that happens. I have Ruth Ellen Hogue and Cynthia James with me. And just to give you a little background, Ruth Ellen is on the board, and we've had Ruth Ellen on the program before. She's a super interesting cross-cultural person. She's a musician and an artist. And she's, as I said, on the board for Santa Barbara Studio Artists. Cynthia James is brand new to the tour this year, so we're going to talk to Cynthia a little bit about how she's preparing and the new ones clean a lot, I hear, Cynthia. So
yes, totally.
That's probably true. We have a longtime member and a very new member, so we want to ask a little bit about the history of the group with Ruth Ellen, and then like we say, the diabetes thing is a really cool benefactor. It's Labor Day weekend, the tour, Saturday and Sunday, so it's coming up, September 3rd and 4th. Hours are 10 to 5 p.m. both days. The reception is tonight, Friday night, September 2nd, from 5 to 8 at the Corridon Gallery. And it's something to see if you haven't seen the reception, because the works of the artists are all on the wall. So you can kind of go around and check. I'd really like to see this artist. I really like to see this artist. And usually what's fun is it's like old home week, because all the artists are just talking amongst themselves. And if you can get in edgewise, you can kind of break up two friends that are talking and say, you know, what are you showing this year and what can I expect in your gallery and this sort of thing. So it's a good thing to do if you've got some free time tonight. The Corridon Gallery is 125 North Milpas Street. And you can actually call William over there, who's a fantastic person, a benefactor of the arts. Call William over there for more information at 966-7939. What's so fun for me about the tours is that you think that everybody in Santa Barbara does just plain air. But reality is that is so not true. You're going to see oil, acrylic, charcoal, pastel, pencil, watercolor. You're going to see shadow boxes, multimedia, all styles. You're going to see scenic things, but you're going to see abstract things. You're going to see figurative stuff. You're going to see still life, but you're going to see some incredible large-scale abstract work, too, which is, you know, you don't necessarily think of that. And also, if you haven't been to the Corridon Gallery, it's an old craftsman house, and William has it set up so that it's really homey feel. You'll walk in, and then I would suggest you'll just maybe grab a bite on Milpas Street and have fun with the evening. When is that open tonight? That's the Corrigan. When is it open tonight? 5 to 8 tonight. So it gives you plenty of time to get a glass of wine and make a reservation for after you see the artist's work. This year there's 40 artists. And that's pretty incredible. Now, you might think that it's expensive. It is not. It is $20 for individuals, $15 for two people or more. And the drill is you just go to the Corridon and pick up a map. And think to yourself, okay, Saturday and Sunday, I'm going to spend a little time. Maybe one day I'll spend a couple hours. The next day I'll spend another couple hours. Chart for yourself the interesting neighborhoods that you want to see. Because the artists are grouped in, you know, various neighborhoods. And some of them are very far out. And some of them are right down the funk zone. But if you get that map, which includes and is included with the ticket price, you get the map. You can just chart where you want to go. And it's a cool thing because not only you discover artists that you might be interested in, and of course you can purchase works, but you can also discover neighborhoods. And so it's kind of a dual thing. And so SantaBarbaraStudioArtist.com is a place to take a look at it. And then if you're interested in the benefactor, www.samson.org. And then here again, if you want to find out more about the opening tonight at the Corrigan, you can call William himself. William Corrigan is at 966-7939. And here again, it's Saturday and Sunday this weekend, Labor Day weekend. And here it is again, Ruth Ellen.
It is. It is. Come around once more.
Well, tell me about the artist that you most expect or you most are excited about seeing.
Well, this is one of the problems of being on the tour. You don't get to see the other artists. Mm. So we have to make dates, play dates with our friends to go see their studios. But there are just wonderful artists. There's like Cynthia here being new. Just fabulous art. And the art has become very diverse,
yes.
And like you said, not all plein air. So there's more variety this year than ever, and it's a wonderful tour.
I understand here there's 10 new artists in 2016. So we have Donna Acekoff, Danuta Bennett, Benjamin Brody, Erica Carter, Wendy Brewer, Mary Ince, Cynthia is here, and she's new. Virginia McCracken, Cynthia Martin, and Maria Remke. Aska McCracken and Carter from Greenhouse Studios in Santa Barbara's Funk Zone. And can you believe it, Richard, the Funk Zone? Shouldn't we have invested in that little puppy about 5 years ago? And it is just going great guns.
We all should have.
Yeah, yeah. Really.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's. I've been down there, and I actually felt so out of place.
Uh-huh.
Because
what
like,
happened?
Because the Funk Zone actually, it's a great thing, I'm sure, for a lot of folks, but I thought, you know, this really belongs over, you know, next to the university, because just all kinds of, mostly young people were there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
it's kind of like Soho in New York, though.
Yeah.
The artists have, rent has gone up so high.
Oh, you can't stay there now.
Yeah.
Or downtown LA Arts District, everybody down there is about 28
years
old. And you walk down there and you feel like you're just an oldster. You know.
Yes, and also, you know, getting priced out a little bit, I know. And this particular studio, artist studio tours from Buellton to the Funk Zone, the Hills of Montecito, et cetera. So, you know, you can also, like I said, chart that tour out with your map, and you can exchange your online ticket if you go online. We were talking about going online. If you go online, www.SantaBarbaraStudioArtist.com, you can exchange the online ticket that you buy online for a tour pass and map if you come to the Corrigan Gallery tonight, which is Friday, September 2nd. Or if you're listening to me on Sunday, you still have time because you've got some time to actually run over to, actually, I think you can spend, what is it, Sunday? Sunday is from 10 to 5 both days.
Right.
So mm-hmm. If you're listening to me on Sunday when this program re-airs, you still have time. I had a really kind of cool conversation with both Ruth Ellen Hoag and Cynthia James in the green room before we came on. So just a little bit of introduction. Ruth Ellen is married to the actor Richard Hoag, and she met him being a total cutie with the black hair flipped over and slicked back, etc., as leader of the Jets.
In West Side Story.
In what
back
year?
Back in Little Barrel in 1975.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You were playing French horn, and he was singing and dancing on stage.
Yep. Pretty cute.
He's pretty cute. This was also the beginning of a wonderful career as an actor, and you will know him, dear listener, as Will Rogers in his one-man show, Will Rogers America. Ruth Ellen's got grown kids in the late 40s, and she looks like she's late 40s herself, probably because she has combined, well, her life is about culture, really, music and art. So super, super to have her back on the air. We're going to wait to introduce Cynthia and tell you a little bit about her bio. We're going to quick break. And we get back, I'm going to tell you a really interesting story about this blonde lady sitting over here to my right who ended up building a B&B in Mayan country in the middle of the jungle. So this is an incredible story. And not only that, I want to talk a little bit how her art is influenced by all the tropical stuff. So she's a must-see on the tour. Don't turn that down. I'll be back in a minute. Young and the Restless, Richard?
No.
What is that?
It's Rachmaninoff.
Okay, but it's theme song from something.
Somewhere in Time.
Somewhere in Time.
With the late Christopher Reeves.
Yes. Okay, that's... Well, okay, so I promised to tell you a little bit about Cynthia James. She married a Mexican guy from Mexico City. Met him back in L.A. in 1987. And went down, thought to themselves, you know, wouldn't it be fun to have a beachfront property in Mexico and maybe do something there, you know, bed and breakfast or something like that. McDuff Everton was a friend of theirs. McDuff is a great photographer who did the Modern Maya book and for years had gone and, you know, really done anthropological excavation, more or less, with his photography. Mm-hmm. Fantastic book. Fantastic book. Anyway, Cynthia and her husband became friends of his and followed his work and ended up going to a place, high Mayan culture, deserted area, bought property on the beach, hacked through the jungle, built Cabana Las Cachitas, which is now leased to some folks under the name Calaluna Chulum.
Chulum.
Right. Mm-hmm. How did that experience, that was about 15 years, Cynthia, that you were working on the property?
Maybe it was longer. It was 96. Actually, it's more than 15 years. But we went down and visited some friends who had a B&B in Tulum on the beach. At that time, there were only about four places. Now there are 75 hotels, and it's become overrun, and it's very touristy in a way compared to how it was when we were
there.
So we ended up building something that looks Mayan. It has the palapa roof, but it's got solid walls and, you know, it has all the amenities. We have ceiling fans instead of air conditioning, but it's all solar. And so we're pretty much off the grid. So you could say it's an eco resort, although that term is kind of an oxymoron because whenever you have tourism, you pretty much damage the environment. So I kind of avoid that. But we try to be as sustainable as we can. And it's right on the beach. And then we have a house across the street, which we're converting into a vacation rental. And it's not like it used to be, but it's still a beautiful place.
When you say it's not like it used to be, so when you first went, tell me about what it was like.
It was just very remote, kind of almost a dirt road. And not too many people. It was mostly backpackers and Europeans that would come down there and rough it. And just really quiet. And recently, it's sort of been discovered by a lot of people from New York. And so they've opened up a lot of boutique hotels and foodie kind of restaurants. And it gets written up in W Magazine now. So it's kind of been discovered. And So it's lost the primitive feeling that it had. But, you know, that happens everywhere in the world. Mm. Whenever you get on a coastal area, it just usually does explode, you know, eventually.
No. Yeah.
So
did anything scary happen while you were building the property?
Yes. I would say that the hurricane was one of the scariest
what year?
Moments. I think that was... It was probably about 2000.
Okay.
And it was one of the strongest hurricanes in history. And the center of it was Tulum. And so it just came right through. But we were lucky. We didn't have too much damage. The water rushed up. And we had
were
some,
you there?
I wasn't there. I was here in Santa Barbara. Okay. My husband was there. Oh. And we lost communication for 3 days. And he had to evacuate. And instead of boarding everything up, we had built so that the hurricane could sort of blow through. It's a different philosophy, you know, instead of putting up the wood panels. Mm. So we just had the interiors. There's no furniture. Everything's built in. So pretty much it's like, you know, kind of waterproof because we used a polished cement. So the water just kind of flowed through. But we did get damage to the palapa roof on a couple of the buildings and then the floor. But it was scary because, he was out of touch with me for 3 days. And he said he moved into town. They went in inland to a sort of a safe house. And he said for 3 days solid, it sounded like the revving of a huge jetliner, just the sound of it. But, you know, he was safe inside this building with all of our stuff. And finally I got through and found out that everybody was okay. And, you know, I was watching the Weather Channel and keeping in touch with what was happening outside. But... Mm. Yeah, that was scary. And then just being in the jungle, you know, there you never know what is out there.
Like what?
Boa constrictors. Not that they attack you, but, you know, they can do some damage if they get around your neck.
I should say.
But a funny story was one of the tourists came down to reception and she said, "Oh, you guys, you're such pranksters. You know, why'd you put that rubber snake on my desk?" She was playing solitaire in her room, and she saw this coiled-up snake, and she thought it was fake. And they said, what are you talking about? So they went up to the room, and they saw that it was a real boa constrictor. It was a baby one that was coiled up, and she just thought it was fake. But, you know, things like that. And then always the idea that you could perhaps get a tropical disease, which I did get. I got dengue fever.
What's dengue fever?
It's passed from the mosquitoes. Mm. And you get a very bad headache, achy, you know, for about a week. And that, you know, that was not fun. But it's not so much that it's a problem anymore because the jungle is not as dense. And since they've built up the area, it's, you know, pretty free of all that.
Hmm. So dengue, I've heard that that is, you know, with the Zika and all that, that dengue is an equal threat. That dengue is related somehow and that...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't think it stays in your body like malaria would and definitely not as serious as Zika.
Yeah, yeah. So. But poor thing.
I know. Well, I suffered for my creation, but it was the hardest thing I ever did, but probably the best thing I ever did because we opened our place and we met people from all over the world, you know, and it was just an incredible experience. And
now, while you were doing that, you're running the B&B. When did you eke out the time to paint?
Well, once it got up and running, we had employees that helped us, and my husband did a lot of the work. So I was across the street in the house, you know, and cooking. I had to cook for the construction crew of 20, you know, so lots of beans and rice and tortillas. But after that construction was over, I just had free time and I got into doing the art, which was inspired by the tropical plants and beautiful.
Do you remember what your first inspiration was when you first like said, I have to do that, I have to draw that, paint that?
I think probably the trip through the waterways, through the kind of swampy lands where there's hanging bromeliads and all kinds of orchids. That you wouldn't see just growing in the wild. It's just very inspiring to be in those kind of exotic environments.
Hmm.
So that and the wildlife, seeing the monkeys.
The first painting
I did was actually a monkey with a big sort of a cacao fruit behind it.
Fascinating. I want to ask you about the Hieronymus Bosch botanicals.
Yeah.
Tell me about those.
Well, I've taken some influence from his art because he created these fantastical scenes.
Yeah.
That, you know, were just amazing combinations of plants.
Very scary, though, in some ways.
Kind of scary,
yeah.
Yes. So they're kind of beautiful, but they're also kind of eerie. And so I'm sort of taking that and applying it to the fact that now we have these genetically modified plants that are being created. Like tomatoes, you know, are now part fish because they've injected, you know, genes from salmon.
You got to be kidding.
So you never know what's going to come out of the
Did
next...
Did you know that?
It's changing my whole view about loving tomatoes.
So non-GMOs are a good thing.
John, did you know that? Oh, no, you did not.
Yeah. This is the first
Doesn't
I've
everybody?
Heard of it.
No.
I'm just kidding.
I didn't know. Okay.
Okay, so the ecological theme then
mm-hmm.
behind it.
Right.
And so you are pointing out with your art that man-made fruits and vegetables and flowers and all this are just as strange as those combinations of half man, half beast in Hieronymus Bosch.
Right, it's kind of a connection there.
I can definitely see. Fantastic. Yeah. And will we see any of those pieces in your open studios?
Yes, I have some up on the wall of the studio, and they'll be able to see them in person.
What have you done to prepare?
A major cleaning.
Yeah.
You said the beginners. You know, it forces you to organize things and, you know, put things up on the wall instead of having them leaning against some back corner. Even found that some of my paintings were actually scratched, so I had to go and touch them up because I had sort of put them in a corner. And general getting things in place.
Has your husband helped?
He helps with hanging the art. Right now, he's in Mexico, actually working on some remodeling of our place down there. So he hasn't been around, but
I could lend you my husband.
Oh.
That's what he's doing today.
Oh, great!
Is he really?
Yes.
Ruth Ellen,
yes.
He's helping.
That's great. Yes.
What's he doing?
Oh, I couldn't do it without him.
Really?
Yeah.
Like what? What's he doing?
Well, he does all the hanging.
Yeah.
For me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Among other things. Yeah.
Yeah.
He bakes the cookies also.
Oh, yeah. you're having cookies.
Oh, of course.
That's great. Yes.
I know some artists go all out and some just like wash the teacup from the morning and that's what you get, you know. It's amazing. So we'll be back with Cynthia James and Ruth Ellen Hogan. Actually, I want to get into more than nuts and bolts because a lot of people that are thinking of making a full career as a painter, they wonder how to budget time, when to get that time to do that, when to get the time to actually be by themselves, to get inspired, to actually do the work, to eke out that time in a busy schedule. And I always think it's interesting to ask artists about how they plan their day, because the day will go away from you if you aren't careful.
Yep.
And so I've got two artists here that I want to talk to about that. Should we go to quick break, Richard? Okay. Go to quick break and back with Ruth Ellen and Cynthia, both on the Open Studio Tours coming up Labor Day weekend. Don't turn that down. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Elizabeth Stewart, the Arts and Antiques Radio Show on KZSB AM 1290. And I'm talking with Ruth Ellen Hoag and Cynthia James. And just the event behind my conversation is the 40 Art Studios Tour, 40, count them, 40, with 10 new artists in the 2016 edition of the Santa Barbara Studio Artist Tour. Really unique to Santa Barbara because everybody grabs a map. They're so friendly. The artists are so welcoming and open, and you can see the work and you can meet the artists. You can target one specific neighborhood. You can go to new neighborhoods. It's definitely fun, and it's this Labor Day weekend, Saturday and Sunday, September 3rd and 4th. It's 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days, and the homes are open. The studios are open, and you can see how the artist actually lives in a space or actually creates in a studio. And we talked before the break about how the artist actually ekes out the time in the day before the day gets away. Mm-hmm. Ruth Ellen, tell me, what's your process? What do? You wake up and...
I wake up and do the dishes from the night before.
Right, me too.
While the coffee is brewing.
Yeah, all right.
But as far as the studio goes, I have banned the computer from my studio.
You have no computer in the studio.
Right.
Well done. So
when I go to the studio, I'm there to work. In the beginning, and that's hard, and I used to have my studio at home.
Where is it now?
It's down. It's right on Cannon Perdido, between Bath and Delavina, right on the corner of St. Vincent, behind Slingshot, the Alphys Art School. So I'm right in that building. But in the beginning, when I was switching from musician to artist, I took my calendar and chose 2 days where I had like 4 hours of those 2 days because I was frustrated not getting the work done. And I crossed out my calendar, and I would not put anything else in the calendar at that time. And it's just grown. I'm at the studio 7 days a week. You talk about home away from home. My husband calls to find out when I'm coming home every day. So yeah, it's
so you look at it as, you know, what hour are you there in the day? You get there at 11?
I get there between around 9 in the morning.
Really?
And I try to get home. I try to leave by 5. So any computer work happens in the evening.
And you're just there painting for that long of a time.
Well, I wish I could say I'm only painting, but there's so much that goes into a painting. There's all the prep work. It's getting the ideas for a painting, and a lot of drawing goes into my painting. So that takes a lot of time. So, and I work large. My favorite work is large, and they will take months to do between gathering the ideas for it and planning it out and sketching and the implementation.
And how do you get, John, I want John to ask, no, you don't, because I can see you already using. All right, you lose. So, Ruth Ellen, so now my question is, where do the ideas come from?
Being a musician, a lot of my ideas come out of that. Being a New Yorker, a lot of ideas come from my love of New York. I'm involved with the Music Academy during the summer and deeply involved with the horn players in particular.
Which you were, yeah.
Which I was, so they're dear to my heart. A lot of ideas come from those subjects.
Let me ask you this. How do you know when you've got a good idea? How do you grab it? Do you write it down? Do you sketch it down?
I do write it down.
Do you have a book with you all the time where you're just like, oh, let me grab this?
Yeah, sometimes in the middle of the night you grab that pad next to the bed like a poet would do or a writer. So you jot down your ideas. And usually the initial idea, you're always looking to see where else can I take that idea? What's an unusual take on the idea? Because while I do figurative work, they are in invented scenes or invented places. So sometimes you just have to let loose with the imagination.
So can you give me an example? So a specific painting where, you know, take me from, okay, I was drinking my coffee and I had this thought that I might put da-da-da-da-da.
Okay. I had my first biggest painting, my first large painting in watercolor is about 52 inches wide and 85 inches tall. Mm. And I had been to New York with my daughter, and I had a photo of her on the steps of the New York Library. Mm. So it started with that. But I didn't want to do just the steps of the library. I had done a lot of sketching of different characters we saw in New York, including we made a journey down to Ground Zero mm-hmm. the night that Bin Laden had been captured and killed. And it was a pilgrimage for us. It was incredible. And there were veterans down there with, you know, flags on their, wrapped around their shoulders. And so that's in that painting. It does all kinds of New York characters and a lot of musicians and so forth. And they occupy a space that are sort of like steps, but it's very abstracted, strange steps, I guess. Anyway, and there's dogs in there and just everything you can think of.
So that was where it's interesting to know where the idea came from.
Yeah.
So the idea came from a real something, a real moment in life.
Yeah.
And then it kind of went in a different way. It's interesting that the metaphor is steps because that's the progression, right? It's going up into kind of the creative space.
It is interesting sometimes other people see things like at the bottom of the paper, there is a dog looking into the scene. And I really didn't think of it that way, but somebody else said, oh, that's very cool that you put that dog looking into that scene. I thought, oh, cool. That wasn't, he was more strategically planned. From an artist's point of view, not so much for what he was doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I find that too when I, you know, as an appraiser, and I'm looking at somebody's work or they've purchased a painting, and I'm thinking, you know, did you notice this? Did you notice that? And it comes out of somewhere. I mean, the Greeks had a word, didn't they, Richard? It was the muses. Mm-hmm. So it was the muses put it there. You know, it wasn't you or the genii put it there. If you're a Muslim, you know,
you're always trying to put your mind into that. Realm where you will be receptive to
to the genii or to the muses. Yeah. We have to go to quick break, Richard. Okay, when we get back, I'm going to ask Cynthia the same question.
Okay.
Which is, to take me from inception, mm-hmm. which is a great word, but inception of an idea and then the execution of it and where it comes from and how it changes along the way, Cynthia. So I'm going to throw the ball in your court when we get back from break. Don't turn that dial. Back with Cynthia and Ruth Allen. very nice music, very tortuous. What was that? Is it Brahms?
That's Rachmaninoff.
Rachmaninoff still,
I've been thinking about him for the last month or so.
Why? And
I don't know. And, of course, next week I may throw in Tchaikovsky.
Rachmaninoff you're thinking about.
Because
very Russian.
The name in and of itself, although we've heard several pieces that are very lilting, very soft. Uh-huh. But when I think of Rachmaninoff, I just think of driving kind of intense, energetic music.
Yeah.
I actually had a question for you, and that
was for Ruth Ellen.
Where does the procrastination bug come in? Does that ever bite you?
Oh, never.
Because you talk about all of these things that influence you and you're driven to
getting it all together.
Yeah. But there's got to be that moment or moments where you go, you get up and you go, I don't want to do the dishes.
You just start. Mm-hmm. You just start and then... and sometimes you throw that start away.
Yeah.
Because once you start, it's kind of like writing. My husband's a writer. And you just start writing. And then after you've written a page, you throw that away. And then, because then you've gotten into the rhythm of what you really want to say. Yeah. It's the same
kind of
with
pulls
painting.
You along.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah.
But the procrastination is always there, and you have to fight it.
Yeah.
Cynthia, tell me about your process. So you get up in the morning and
wash the dishes.
Really?
a few chores I have to do. You know, and it's sort of like a writer would sit in their office and sharpen pencils. You know, just sort of kind of do all those little cleanup chores, kind of get yourself psyched up, and then probably around 11. By then, I'm sort of ready. I'm not a morning person. I actually like to paint at night. So I start at 11 and then take a lunch break probably at 1 or 2. And then just depending on how the painting is going, if I'm right in the middle of a flow of something and, you know.
What does the flow mean?
The flow is, you know, for me, it's sort of you get into an alpha state in your brain and you just lose track of time. Mm-hmm. And it's just all happening and it just starts to flow like, I guess, you know, an Olympic athlete would have. It just happens, and you can't stop it. You don't want to stop it because it feels good, and everything's happening the way it should. And so if that's happening, then I will go sometimes for 5 hours straight, you know, maybe just take a bathroom break. Mm-hmm. But that's rare. I mean, I don't have that happen all that much.
I know.
It's too bad. I just wait for those moments. Yeah. But like Ruth said, you just have to start doing it. You can't wait to be inspired. You just start doing the painting, and then it starts to happen. You get maybe a little of the flow, and it comes as you're doing it.
And what's your medium?
Oil paint.
Oil. So you can't palette knife it off. I mean, once you're...
Yes.
Yeah. So when you say just start, you know, that's problematic.
It's trickier. Yeah. I'm painting on copper right now,
yes.
Which is really fun.
Retablo style.
Yeah, and it's an ancient form of painting. Mm. They did it back in the 13th century, and those paintings are still pretty in good shape.
Yeah,
I mean,
they have a glow to them.
Yes, and you just lightly sand it, and the oil actually adheres to the metal, and I love it because it's real smooth, and I like to do, you know, detail work. So that's fun, and... But, you know, you could sand it. You probably could sand the oil paint off if you made a mistake.
How long does it take you to do a painting?
It depends on the size. Or, you know, sometimes it's taken me 2 months on, you know, a large one. Or just how the process I might hit a snag. But I usually am pretty academic about doing a sketch. Mm. I try to plan it out in my head and a sketch before I actually paint. I'm not one of these... spontaneous action, you know, Jackson Pollock type painters that just go at it. You know, I'm more methodical, although I'm trying to become more, a little bit looser.
What are you thinking, Ruth Ellen? You're thinking over there. I see the steam rising.
I do a lot of planning too, like the painting I showed you. Mm-hmm. Lately, I've been doing a lot of acrylic. And working abstractly. I still start with an idea, but I can do 3 acrylic paintings in the time it takes me to do 1 watercolor because of the planning.
Well, you can't go backwards with watercolor. Acrylic is a whole different.
It's more forgiving then, but don't tell anybody that. They think it's magic.
Oh, really? You know, it's interesting because you mentioned looking at the Open Studio tours this coming weekend. I'd be interested for John's sake taking him to a couple of photographers. And you mentioned my good buddy Sol Hill and how Sol's very painterly in his photography. And it's interesting because when he was sort of, it must have been now 5 years ago or so, I visited him and he was thinking about getting into a certain show. And he said, you know, I would like some help with thinking about which pieces to offer, which pieces to bring. And I remember there, he works large, you know, large, like room-sized panels, this sort of thing. And he had like 3-4 panels leaned up against his truck out there. And I looked and I said, well, Sol, I think you need to flip this one and use this one horizontally. And he didn't think of him that way. Mm-hmm. And I find it really interesting to look at a piece and then say to the artist, you know, have you looked at it from upside down or from sideways or from, you know, and this really is, especially with more abstract pieces, you can really start to see the composition. You start to see where their head is around the composition. And I also have one thing I'd like a reaction to, which is a lot of artists, you know, when I've been appraising for almost 30 years, and about 15 years ago, I started inviting people that I thought were interesting and they needed help pricing their work because, you know, everybody's always confused about how to price their work. And, you know, that's what I do. I look at value all day long. And so I had an artist come to the office and said, you know, I'm kind of in a rut. I'm kind of in a rut. I paint large. I paint multi-chromatic. I paint in oil. It takes me about 2 years to finish a piece, and I'm just in a rut. And I don't know where this thought came from, but I said to him, do me a favor, paint small, paint grisel, you know, just grays and blacks and very subtle browns, and paint on grisel, and he was an abstract painter, paint figuratively. Do the exact opposite of what you would normally do. And suffice to say, he reported back to me that, yeah, that broke his rut. Somehow, just looking at the polar opposite broke his rut. Okay, I'm talking too much, Richard. I know we got to go to quick break. Don't turn that down. I love the response from our two visiting artists celebrating in Santa Barbara Open Studios Tour this Labor Day weekend, 10 to 5. Don't turn that down. Back with Ruth Ellen and Cynthia. So I spoke with Ruth Ellen and Cynthia about this idea of the writer's block only translated into the artist's block. React to that, Cynthia.
Well, I guess the thing would be, even though you hit a block, to just try to relax and play around. Don't take it too seriously and just maybe keep painting and maybe something will happen and all of a sudden the spark, the muses will enter in and get you going. Or you can just say, okay, I'm going to take the day off. I'm not going to struggle with it. I'm going to go, you know, pay bills or do something left brain, you know, because it is. It's such a separate thing. The left brain activities and then the right brain with the creativity. It's sort of like I almost have to take a week off just to do all that business left brain stuff because
really?
It's so hard to mix,
uh-huh.
to jump back and forth.
Uh-huh.
Well, you know, Picasso said, inspiration exists, but it must find you working.
Oh, that's
so that,
great.
Yeah,
oh,
that's what keeps me working. Hoping inspiration
exists, and it must find you
that
working.
Will find me.
Find you working. Yeah. That's very interesting. All right, Richard, what? We have to go?
Okay.
We have 2 minutes. Okay, I get to ask one more. No, you know what I'm going to do is give one more shout out to Santa Barbara Studio Artist Tour. This is the 15th annual Open Studios Tour. Can you believe it? William Sampson Diabetes Center beneficiary, Labor Day weekend, Saturday and Sunday, September 3rd and 4th, hours 10 to 5 p.m. Artist reception tonight, if you're listening, and it's Friday, September 2nd, from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Corridon Gallery, and that's 125 North Milpas. It's an older house, so keep a looking for that. More information, www.santabarbarastudioartist.com, and you'll see on the website the gorgeous little thumbnails of everybody. And so you actually can pick and choose who you want to see, and then if you get the map, you can see what neighborhoods they're in. Some fantastic artists. I think this is the best show so far. Really,
I think so,
Ruth
too. Yeah. Yeah.
Do not miss it. All right. Thank you, ladies. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Bye.